I'm Graham McIntosh and I'm a member of the committee.
I think it is important for me to preface this presentation with what the minister indicated in her budget speech for 2010-11, where he said with civic services within the department, we are really turning the corner for those that are still challenges. However, with immigration, there's still a lot of challenges. Now the focus for the department will be on issues around immigration. So, Chair, what we'll be presenting is to show those challenges, but what is important is to say what are we doing with those challenges. Chair, the presentation is split here into parts of entry and as well as the asylum seekers. So we'll be dealing with the background, what is the number of parts of entry we have. What is important is to share with the committee what are the responsibilities of other stakeholders in the border management process, and what is the Home Affairs mandate in such countries, and what are our admission processes as well as the departure processes, what systems which we are using in terms of the advanced passenger processing system, enhanced movement control system, and what is the statistics? It was important for the committee in terms of what is the number of people we are dealing with in this course of entry. The issues of the infrastructure and traveler trusted program which we want to implement, and the issue which we are looking at going forward in terms of rationalization of ports, and cooperation with the CHUK banks with regard to strengthening the security in our ports of entry with the challenges. After that, I will go to the Archaeological. The Republic of South Africa shares borders with six countries, namely Lesotho, Swaziland, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Botswana, and Namibia. There are currently 72 designated ports of entry, 10 airports, 9 harbors, and 3 land ports. When the movement of persons and goods is managed efficiently and effectively through the participation of other border management stakeholders who have a clear responsibility at the port of entry and borderline. So, in terms of the ports of entry, which I have, I think it's just to share with the committee that this map shows us that the land border distance is 4,750 kilometers and the sea border distance is 2,800 kilometers, which would be very huge. And then we give an aware at these ports, which are 72 in terms of. We say we're sharing with Namibia, what are those ports of entry, Botswana, what are those ports of entry, Zimbabwe, Swaziland, and Lesotho, and then we give what are our airports. So that was just to show the magnitude of the area which we deal with the department. But in terms of other stakeholders in the border, SNDF, is responsible for borderline and territorial protection and prevention of illegal entry and or departure. But currently, they are not able to cover that 4,750 and 2,800 borderline. As Chair, we are aware that the SNDF was recalled from the borderline. It is only recently that they have been mandated to go back to the borderline. So for now, they're only able to cover the area which is more around Mozambique and Swaziland. That's only where they are. So this year, they'll be looking at some areas around Lesotho, and the rest is still having nothing. So that shows how borderline, how it is porous. And if you don't have a close on the borderline, how effective is your port of entry? It still means a little bit on the scheme of things. Then we've got police. Their responsibility is crime prevention, public order, and enforcing law within and around ports of entry. And then SARS is to enforce customs and exercise acts of 1964. Then health controls and regulates cross-border movement of medicines and other healthcare products, including the yellow fever certificate. Department of Agriculture regulates the importation of animals, plants, and their products. Public Works has got a key role, provision of adequate infrastructure. So these are the different mandates of the department in the government. That's for Home Affairs. We are responsible for facilitation of the legal entry and departure of all persons into and out of the Republic through a designated port of entry, enforcement of compliance with the Immigration Act, Refugee Act, and their regulation by ensuring that all persons entering or departing do so lawfully and in compliance. Ensuring that all foreigners enter the country section and reside consummate to the terms and conditions of their permit. Track, trace, and investigate and deport foreigners who have become illegal or violated the immigration legislation of the country. And in terms of admission and process requirements, all travelers entering or departing from the Republic must be in possession of a valid passport. Travelers from visa-required countries must apply and obtain a visa which were allowed them to approach a court of entry. So I think it's important for me to emphasize the fact that a visa is only allowing you to move from your country to a port of entry. Because at a port of entry is where that you are given the permission now to sojourn into the country. So always is a problem that people think that if they've got a visa, it automatically means that they must just come into the country. That's why we've got immigration officers in the port of entry. Then travelers from visa exempt countries do not need a visa to approach a port of entry. That's what I mean. At the port of entry, the immigration officer will examine the traveler as prescribed in the immigration regulations and capture the details of the traveler through the enhanced movement control system. The traveler's passport, in the case of a foreigner, will be endorsed with a temporary resident permit, allowing him or her to proceed into the Republic, because it might be the purpose of the visit and the number of days qualified for. That's why if now we're talking about the temporary residence permit, it might be a visitor's permit, it might be a medical visit, all those temporary, that's what now we're looking at and endorsing it. This gives you a particular period to be in the country. In case of a non-compliance with admission requirements, traveler shall be refused admission and repatriated to country of residence. So that's why at the port of entry we will be able to return people who have come not with the necessary documents or complying with what they're supposed to comply with. Then in the case of a hit, a traveler shall be handed over to the relevant stakeholder to conduct further inquiries on the traveler. If a person has got a case which we have allowed, we're going to go back to the issue of the advanced passenger processing system. But if that person has got a case, then we'll be able to hand over that individual either to police or to SARS, which is the issue of customs issues.
What do you mean by a hit?
A hit means that we have been proven positive. We have responded positively in some of the listings which we have, even with the Interpol, because our system is even with Interpol. So if now we've got a case, we are a wanted person, then I would say we've got a hit, then I will take you to the relevant area to deal with you, whether it's police or customs. Thanks. Then in terms of the departure, that all travelers departing from the Republic must be in the possession of a valid passport. That means even our citizens, we don't let them just go. We'll be able to look at it that we've got a valid passport. Travelers, in case of foreigners, must depart on or before the expiry of their temporary residence permit. That's why she will be talking about fines. That if now when we're coming in, as we're saying, that as the immigration officer needs to check if the visitor's permit is for a period of 3 months, if now you expire that, then it attracts now a penalty. Then before you leave, you need to say you are having this penalty because you didn't leave within your period of time. At the port of entry, the immigration officer will examine the traveler's prescribed in the immigration regulations and capture the details of traveler through the EMCS. Then, when we talk about the numbers, we see what is the volume of the travelers which are sitting in our system, which we are keeping the information when we have come to the country, when we have left, even when we are supposed to have left the country. The traveler's passport in case of a foreigner will be endorsed with the departure stamp. In case of a non-compliant with admission requirements, the traveler shall be informed in the prescribed manner of the transgression and assisted accordingly. If the same in case of a subsequent, the traveler shall be handed over to police to conduct further inquiries. The student can commit a crime whilst you are inside the country. Or you are even a South African, you are trying to run away from your case, then I'm going to say no, you know, you cannot leave because there is this issue. So, let me come to this advanced passenger processing system. And there's always this system, how it assists us to deal with the issues of people before Medical System, and it was an airliner to advise the issue of a person's intended travel prior to the issue of a boarding pass. The biological data in the traveler's passport captured on check-in forms the basis of this advice. So in your country of origin, you've got a process to check you before you are issued with a boarding pass to say, are you having issues, so that we are able to not allow you to even come to our country and deal with you when you are here. We must be able to deal with you whilst you are in your country. Then this data is sent to APP system, which then performs checks against the HA data sources, and the business will see the systems and extend the directive to the airliner whether or not to board the passengers. So we are assisting the passengers in advance before they come. APP checks travelers against the DHA visa and entry stop list, South African passport issued, lost and stolen South African passport, and South African visa issued to detect the status of a traveler before boarding, as well as Interpol as I indicated. If a negative boarding directive is provided, the airline has an opportunity to consult the DHA operational center in the Republic to verify the inadmissibility of that passenger. A government override can be performed on a possible hit when some of the data match those of a person or the data sources, and the person can be allowed to travel. What do we mean by this check? If that individual has got a warrant of arrest because of a crime which has been committed in South Africa, though he's got a hit, in that instance, we allow that person to come in because there is a purpose. Was one now to be able to reflect that arrest. But if it is something which is beyond, it has nothing to do with us, then we'll be able to say, no, this person is an Interpol list, therefore we don't want that person to come into our country. So I'll just explain in what circumstances we allow. If the airliner disregards the negative APP boarding directive, the traveler will refuse admission and the airliner fines a prescribed amount and order to repatriate the traveler at full cost. So, to advise, I think that there were instances where it would be in the media to say this particular person is here, but it's being returned. But to say, well, we did advise the airliner, but disregarded our advice. But based on the information we have, we still insist that that person is not allowed. If it is an additional layer of security that enables us to perform pre-clearance on travelers, decrease the workload and associated risk involved in having to deny a person entry on arrival and serve as an early warning to DHA and other Department of Persons of Interest on a particular flight to quell the interventions ahead of their arrival. So this system is in the next one. It is linked with the Justice Crime and Prevention Security Cluster Department. So it helps the cluster in terms of combating crime because we are informed before the people they bought. So this system was implemented in November 2009 in terms of National Integrated Border Management Strategy as a World Cup legacy project that is in line with the standards and recommended practice of international civil aviation organization. As I've indicated, and other users of the APP include State Security Agency, South African Revenue Services, and South African Police. Airlines were progressively enrolled in the system after going through a test and certification process. Currently, 43 out of 46 airliners operating to South Africa are APP compliant. However, Chair, we recall that in the amendments, we wanted to put this in the Act so we can enforce, so that airliners, they don't join voluntarily, but it will be in terms of protest. The following benefits were identified from the APP for DHA. Over 790 prohibited and undesirable being offloaded from flight. Any warning was received in respect of more than 800 persons whose names appear on the visa and the entry stop list for monitoring purposes. Sales passport checks were activated for certain segments of travelers on 11th. APP has denied travelled for over 1,907 travellers whose South African passport have been found to be either lost, stolen, cancelled, or fraudulent. SARS reported benefits of passenger alerts and successes related to narcotic stations. The APP is essential to state security operations and reported successes, including human trafficking. This is a program which we are not yet implemented, but what it should be fit around our course of leadership. This program is aimed at ensuring that regular rapid travelers enrolled into system and travel into and out of the country hassle free, more especially at a land port of entry. We said that will be piloting with the Maseru Bridge. It also meant to reduce traveler congestion at ports of entry in the sense that travelers enrolled into the system will have a sort of a self check in and check out with minimal assistance and intervention from immigration officers that currently happen. But it doesn't mean we're going to be using something like a biometric, which would make sure us that we're dealing with that particular individual. Immigration officer will monitor and manage to check in and check out to ensure compliance with the clearance of legislation. The design of the system should be finalized before the end of this financial year. I hope right now that an movement control system would advance passenger processing system within the country of origin, and then the movement control system is in the country. At the immigration desk, now travelers that were allowed access to the country are processed by recording their arrival by way of scanning travelers' passports onto the enhanced movement control system. Immigration officials ensure illegal immigrants store away deserters and asylum seekers are dealt with in terms of the Immigration Act of 2002 as amended. With regard to asylum seekers, since when now we issue an asylum seeker with Section 23 at a port of entry. When you claim that as an asylum, then at that point you issue the Section 23 under the Immigration Act, not the Refugee Act. Immigration investigate the cause of a hit. If a hit is generated and affected the traveler, is an undeserved person as we was stayed on a previous visit as an outstanding penalty against their name or is traveling on a passport to be stolen. Immigration officer has to investigate the cause of a hit, and depending on the risk, the traveler may be allowed passage into the country or be refused entry and be repatriated. Some hits are presented to the SAPS desk and SAPS interviews the traveler to determine the administrability of the traveler. Travelers in transit also have their passport scanned in the same process of management of hits is carried out. So because of these countries we are caused by, because when it comes to asylum seeker problems, it's when I'm for that people they travel from these far countries and transit to the nearby, and then they come back as asylum seekers. But by implementing that process of a transit process, it helps us to say we always know that this person has passed through. Why now you pass through as a visitor, now how would you come back to us now as an asylum seeker? A total of 47 ports of entry has been equipped with the EMCS. The project is still going on to equip the remaining 25 ports of entry within this current financial year, so we can have the complete net. The MCS has improved the efficiency, security, and turnaround times of the admission process, and that traveler data is no longer captured manually, but it is scanned into the system. This automation data capturing exercise has improved the quality and accuracy of the information of the travelers being recorded by the immigration officers as is required by the Immigration Act. But when you come now to what we are doing with the Chupens, yes, initially our interest was really on what speed we are able to process the traveler. But now we have added the issues of security, because now we are able now to check people are coming to our country. We ask relevant questions so that we make sure why you are here and why you want to leave. The cost benefit of that departments and agencies can, as I was saying, can utilize the system on their respective functions. Information sharing among the sector partners and actors of information capture. So we've got the APP, which are sharing together, as well as the movement committees who are doing it together with the department. So this is to show the statistics in one financial year. I have to say, in the 2012, with the citizens in terms of arrival, when they were out, 5,237,497 people have departed, was 5,291,274, and then when we say inbound transit, people are moving around and then we are going outside. So now the total is 10,532,175, which are processed for our own nationals. Then foreigners, arrival 13,064,265, which also in terms of tourism also say something those figures. And departure 11,406,213, inbound transit 296,118, transit outbound 7,282. The total is 24,000,000. So these ports of entry were processed 35,306,052 individuals in a huge number in a population of plus minus 40. But you can see that South Africa is still attracted a point of designation by the people. So in terms of infrastructure, I think that is important for us to say one of the key challenges of the port of entry remains the lack of service and residential accommodation. To resolve this matter, the minister did approach National Treasury for additional allocation, which this year will receive 110 million, which has been allocated for infrastructure improvement at the port of entry, but that will do it through the Department of Public Works. So the department has provided the infrastructure needs to the Department of Public Works to commence with identified priority rental land and maritime port of entry. That the maritime is a potential for us. That yes, we've been doing something at a land port level, but with the maritime, it's now that we are starting. So that 110 is going to be helping us. So for this year, our pilot is with the Cape Town Harbour, as we started last year, and as well as the Devon. And then we've also been looking at the others like Saldanha, Roha, and then the one in the stream in Devon. What is that town? Richards Bay. And the one at the Richards Bay. So that we can start now looking at the this will improve and transform the infrastructure to ensure a suitable working environment and that occupational health and other operational risks are managed. So coming on this topic of the rationalization of ports, in fact, we will go back to that map of the 72 ports of entry. What we have realized is that in some of these border posts, we find that there is an official from police, but there is no home affairs and there is no SARS. Now you question yourself what that border post is for if there's only one person managing that. And some, so it means now these ports are just a gate instead of it being a border post in terms of managing the processes. Hence, now we have to deal with the issue of this rationalization of the ports of entry. So within the port environment, South Africa is faced with a large number of ports of entry, which are not always easily accessible, performing different functions, have different stakeholders represented, reflect large variations between the movement of travelers and goods, and different operational hours, are poorly resourced, and faces infrastructure challenges. This contributes to a poor state of security at our borders and ports of entry, which at times facilitate both transnational syndicate crimes and the presence of undocumented foreign nationals. This requires the strategic management of South African border environment in a coordinated manner to create a workable balance between security, trade, tourism, and economic development within the country and the South region. So, the restoration of Kosovo will be supported by a baseline research to develop criteria to designate a port of entry. We need to have a criteria, as the spelling out to say, what do we need to have in order for us to designate a risk profile and strategic information on the importance of each port of entry to inform the decision making process. This will result in improved strategic and resource management in a border environment. So I've talked about this, our collaboration between Cuba and ourselves. The President led a high-level government delegation to Cuba during 2010 to enhance cooperation between the two countries. And with regard to Home Affairs, the technical support agreement was signed, which covered immigration issues. The implementation of the agreement is done in a phased approach, where phase one included a diagnostic analysis of the department, and the report was provided to the Minister of Home Affairs after the visit of the Cuba delegation in 2011. A phase two of the program included a pilot program at OR Tambo. This phase focused on recruiting 250 immigration officers for defense. These officials were jointly trained by DHA and training specialists from Cuba, after which they were successfully deployed at OR Tambo International Airport on 21st December 2011. Now, Chair, we are really working hard now on implementing the improvements in the maritime environment. As the Minister indicated in his budget speech, starting this year, we'll be training plus minus about 80 officials. We must understand how to manage the harbor environment, maritime environment. So in terms of challenges, guarding off borders, the porous nature of the borderline and coastline and effective monitoring of land survey and seaport has contributed to inflow of illegal immigrants in an undetected manner. However, the JCPS cluster is attending to this matter. I've just checked that now the defense is already going back to the borderline. We're also discussing now in the interagency clearing forum with defense in terms of which areas we must prioritize for the building of defense. Because that will also assist us, so that as we put other things, then we're able to do that. The issue of inadequate infrastructure improvement and maintenance, as I've indicated, the lack of capacity to operate at an optimal level. Hence, we are engaging now on that study of making sure what is the criteria of a port of entry. Once you agree on that, as these parties, then we're able to say that is a port of entry which has got only one person operating in it. It's not a port of entry function. But that will help us now to come with that. Chair, as you are aware, that we did submit the amendments in the Immigration Act, which now we're in the process of just finalizing the regulations. But what that will help, one of the important aspects of that was the issue of the landing card. In the landing card, it will now tell us where this person is going within the country, where that person will be staying, so that now we can be able to say, you came here saying you are a visitor for a period of 2 weeks. Now the 2 weeks is over, and you said that you're staying in this particular hotel, but you are no longer there. And with the IT modernization, which we are also involved in, we want to do all those things in an electronic format where we can manage it manually. So the landing card will be telling us the details of where this visitor is going, because we cannot manage any longer this thing of not managing the visitors not properly. So that's what we want. Then, Chair, we want to enforce with the airline now, as I said, that at the moment it is on a voluntary basis. So we want every airliner to be compliant with the APT, so that the information before the person bought and the information when this person is registered in our MCS and the information where the person is staying and where is not coming back. Also with the issue that now we'll be making sure that people, they don't change their status in the country except for issues of medical reasons where we'll accept change. Chair, depending on the chair, how we will proceed, whether we get the questions around the ports of entry or the continued project.
No, I think it will be the case we continue with all the presentations and then we will have questions.
So I'm coming to the difficult part of the presentation, which is our issue of the asylum seeker management. Because it is a fact. It is a fact that as a country at the moment, we really have more a pull factor than a really push factor around the issue of the asylum seekers. It is on record that currently we are the highest country in the world to attract the asylum seekers. Which poses a huge risk in the department and even in terms of the capacity to be able to deal with this matter. But when I come to the statistics, I will be able to demonstrate that these are the numbers we have. And so the numbers I've confidently talked about is only those who have come in a legal way in the country. I'm not talking about asylum seekers who have crossed the borderline. I don't have that. And I think we'll be on record as a department that we do not know the number of illegal immigrants in the country. So, I think I want to present that. So, the presentation will follow more or less the same process in terms of the introduction and what is the processing of the newcomers. What are the top five countries of new arrivals we are receiving in the country? What is the status determination in terms of identification? And the issue of extensions of the existing asylum seeker permits, as we are not having a capacity to be able to deal with the issues of appeals and all that, which I will explain. And the refugee appeals court, I will also explain this graph that we've got the future page what and the progress in terms of the implementation of the future and the challenges which we have in the way forward. So these are just the acronyms, so I tried now on this one whether I can understand what they mean. So RRO is a refugee reception officer, is someone who's working within the refugee center. And RSTO is a refugee status determination officer, the one who's doing the first adjudication. And then UNF means unfounded. Unfounded means that when we're dealing with that case, it was really a gray area for an RSTO to take a decision that this person is not qualifying as an asylum seeker. Then that would be referred now to the refugees appeals board because it is a grey area, so they can look at it and take a decision. Then an MU is a manifestly unfounded. It's where it is a clear cut that this person is not an asylum seeker in all the criteria we have in terms of is this person persecuted for any reason. You can't find that reason. It's where we'll be talking about the issues of economic migrants. But in South Africa, we always believe that your life can be put on one individual. So you have to have an appeal process. Though you are saying this is a clear cut, that somebody else must be able to review whether your decision was correct or not, which causes the bottleneck. That's why talking about SGRA. And then in section 22, that temporal asylum seeker permit, which you get once you visit a refugee center, your matter has not yet been dealt with. And then a standing committee that talk about the refugee prisoners, RAP, and then SGRA is a standing committee for the future. In terms of people seeking asylum, either use a port of entry, so I'm using it carefully, and say either use a port of entry whereby a Section 23 permit is issued in terms of the Immigration Act, or, that's what you're now saying, either, or irregular jump borders, that's what you mean, enter South Africa in order to seek an asylum. That is the point. No, I said people must go through a proper process, but check there are really in some of the countries which are sharing a border with. Because I'm saying if now I'm in South Africa, I'm running for whatever, it might not be possible for me to go through a port of entry, because if I do that, I'm going through the government property which I'm running out of it. Therefore, in that instance, I can go through a borderline, but where it is problematic is when now you are coming from a third country. Because we're saying, how did you move from your country and come to the third country and then you come to a border? You surely should have something. But that's how we are getting asylum. Refugee Refugee officers consider and process refugee asylum cases in line with the Refugee Act and issue various permits to regulate the stay of an asylum seeker and refugees in the country. This includes Section 22. That's it. Section 23 is the one now which is issued at a port of entry. Immediately, you raise an issue that you are here for an asylum seeker, then the port of entry has to issue that Section 22. Then now we are given now, that Section 23 allows you to go to a refugee reception office currently within 14 days to go and appear in front of that RSDO. Then Section 22 is issued to all asylum seekers with registered asylum claims. The permit is valid for 6 months whilst awaiting the finalization of the application. So once you present yourself, that RSDO can be able to make a decision, one, to grant you the status, which now will be given as Section 24, or says your case is manifestly unfounded, or it is unfounded. Then that Section 22 allows you now for that process to be finalized. That's why now we issue that as Section 22. Then Section 24, permit is then issued to all those asylum seekers whose application have been assessed and are found to be in need of this protection in the Refugee Act. Then the Refugee Reception Office has also received applications for refugee identity documents and refugee travelers documents being processed under the Refugee Office. Now currently 4 Refugee Reception Offices in the country that are processing newcomers and providing services to asylum seekers and refugees. These are located in Mosina and Limpopo, Western Cape, Cape Town, one in Durban, and in Marabastad. PE is in the process, which I'll come to now. In addition, a satellite office has been established in Pretoria to mainly deal with the cases of the refugee center, which was in Crown Mines, as well as our other projects which we were working on in terms of this extension. So that TRO is only dealing with that. As we are aware that the Port Elizabeth office has not been operating since October 2012. They're still finalizing now all those pending cases, but the closure of this office is still under the consideration of the High Court. Cape Town office chair, we've received another court order which we received around Cape Town. And whilst we were still having that issue, the way this reception office is located, it's got a passage which you are dependent from another landlord in order for you to access that electricity center. Now the landlord has given us a letter which says now no more wanting us to use that process. So that matter, we have already consulted with the stakeholders around Cape Town to inform them of the issue. Then the landlord has given us up to end of June to vacate the premises. So it's another challenge now which we have at the department to deal with it, but they will be consult with the stakeholders to inform them of the critical situation. To deal now with this issue of the demand, I'm going to show you the statistics. We will try to come up with a process of how we can deal with the asylum seekers who are visiting our refugee center. RAB appeals process. It is important to know that during appeals, applicants are entitled to a fair hearing to present their case fully. The appeals board may, after hearing an appeal, confirm or set aside in the substitute of the refugee status determination officer's decision. But we want to come on the backlog which we have around that RAP, and as well as they deal with the unfounded cases, and then in case of manifestly unfounded, the standing committee reviews and confirms or set aside decisions taken by the RSDO and refer cases back to us for determination within 14 days of the decision. But that is the rule, but we are not achieving that, but I'm fine. How we have structured now our offices in terms of how they receive people on a daily basis. So definitely we've got days. Because we think that we're not hoping that we get everybody to come to our offices because those backgrounds. And so why don't we split people in terms of their regions, and then we're able to say we deal with people on these days and all that. So then. So now when I come to the statistics, then we will just say that, okay, this is what we're doing. So we split and know that on Monday, Durban looks at Central Africa, Cape Town look at the French-speaking countries, and then Musina, how they do it, Marabastad, and all that. Then we check currently, because of the issues we have in Marabastad, even included the Saturday, when I will look East Africa. So in Marabastad, Saturday, we do Monday and Tuesday, and Wednesday East Africa, and then Thursday West Africa, and then Friday Asians and other countries, then we included Saturday to deal with the East Africa country. Then Port Elizabeth, as you said, we are not now getting newcomers. Now, so when we're looking at terms of the arrivals that we have, the highest in Durban will be the Ethiopians, and then DRC, Burundi, Somalia, and India. That's how we look at the numbers. Cape Town, the Zimbabweans, Malawians, Bangladesh, DRC, and Somalia. In Musina, is Zimbabwe, DRC, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Malawi. And then in Marabastad, Zimbabwe, DRC, Ethiopia, Bangladesh, and so you can be able now to see even with that table in terms of which foreign nationals we are dealing with them most than the other countries. That this is showing us we just took just the 4 months to look at the numbers which we have, that in Durban for the 4 months they received 1,247, then Cape Town 5,956, and then Musina 4,274, and Marabastad 18,900. So it means that in a 4 months period, So we are able to receive that is 5910, and that is going to include that almost 30,000 people which we are receiving just on a 4-month basis. That's why we are saying we are really the most country who is receiving the asylum seekers. But when I show you now, the other slide is talk about the people who are renewing, then when I say the magnitude of that. Well, with those numbers, you see now that at Durban, out of that 1,247, Durban was able now to interview 1,042. So already there is 205, that's why there is that pending, which were not being able to even interview. That's why it's creating a backlog. And then out of that, adjudicated, find the same number in Durban. But what is important, Chair, is that out of that number, people were able to be granted an asylum is only 51. So 839 is unfounded and manifestly unfounded. So if you look at it, out of that number, only 51 were able to qualify. Then the rest are not. And then you go to Cape Town. Cape Town, out of the 5,946, was able to interview 1,611, creating now a backlog for the 4 months. Already of 4,235 are sitting now with that will not be able to be attended to. Then out of that 1,600, the number of granted is only 147. Then you go to the and when you go to Musina, 3,077 which were interviewed, and then still you leave with 1,201. But the number of is granted is only 13 and qualified as asylum seeker. And then the rest have been rejected. And then Marabastat, which has got 13,911, only 272 which were granted, the rest not. So these refugee centers are there, but the output in terms of is only in terms of people who are qualifying, the rest are not. Then PE is the one the church is already closed, but yet what I'm saying is that just processing the interviews. But even there, you find that the numbers are still giving us the same issues. Sure, this is a problematic slide. What this means is those extensions, now where I said, because that person has been found manifestly unfounded or unfounded, it has to go through the process of appeal either to SCRA or to REG. So at that point, I still need to give extensions to the people to say, come back because your case is still pending. If you look at this number in total, because now Devon is for 16,794 for 4 months, and then Cape Town 52,000, Musina 14,000, Marabastat 97,000, PE 6,000, 215. So in these 4 months, we have issued extension to 188,409. So if you extrapolate that figure to the end of the financial year, So plus minus 800,000 are the people that were coming to our offices for extension. As I've said, that this number, the one I'm talking about, is for the people who have come through that section 23, that is to a port of entry. They were issued now with the section 22. So if a person is in the country, they didn't come to our refugee reception center, is not part of this number. Then this is where you are saying, if you look at that now, that I'm sitting with 188,000 in terms of those extensions. But now the refugee appeals court, the capacity now to deal with these cases, which means now that 188, there is a possibility that by the end of this 6 months, I must still be issuing them with that extension, because the appeals court is not having the capacity to deal with that, because out of that, the cases, if I say now the appeals lodge now for this is 7,086. This one is from now January to April. And then based on that, what has been lodged, the cases which were booked, 1,200, hearings which they managed to have was 552, and the cases which they were finalized is 1,776. So it means now the difference between 1,776 and the 7,886 is added now on that coming for the renewal, because that case has not been finalized. And even that, what is important now, when you see now the cases really which now have been even still been referred back, even that there's only 400 which has been confirmed. It still goes back to that issue to say, we are dealing with huge numbers, but the claims for the asylum seeker are not valid, because even there is only 400 which you get out of that. SCRA, which is the manifestly unfounded. There they managed 20,000 which were scheduled. They were able to consider 14,000. And then 14004, they said, yes, we agree that these cases are really manifestly unfounded. And then the cases were set aside is only 46 out of those cases. So it just shows you the magnitude of the numbers of people who are coming without a claim that you have to process. So, what we are also doing with this, we are really finalizing the issue of the regulations as they were approved. But what Anna was saying, this will help us now is that with that process, we really want now that even at that section 23 level, the immigration officers must be able to do some level of inquiry, even at the port of entry. That's what the regulation is. And also to provide interpretation services at the port of entry, and one could revise that form in terms of what information. Well, the problem you sit with it is that when people they get into a port of entry, they give you a certain story. Once now they get into the refugee reception office, they try to interpret that information is not the same. So we wanted to upgrade that form so that the information we get, and we're going to a level even of taking check the fingerprints, because again people they go into a port of entry as this particular name, and then they get the port of entry as somebody else. So we want to make sure that there are those integration of the systems that can be able to make this. So chair, what will assist us now in these numbers which we're talking about, which is not going to be a 2 month thing, is that in the amendment will be now establishing this data determination committee instead of SCRA, which will be able to process instead of that RSPO, will have those committees now to try and process concept of refugee. And then the refugee appeals board, because now it's only central, so it would be decentralized now in each of the port of in each of the refugee reception offices. And in terms of the SCRA, there's a committee now which we'll call it a Director's General Review Committee, which means that the SCRA is establishing that we have no capacity to deal with these unfounded cases. And the issue of the registration of children, as we talked about during the amendment, we need to show that we implement that. So the important one is this chair, where we say now we are in the process of drafting this policy, but this policy is really, really looking at differentiation between the economic migrants with low skills and asylum seekers. Because if you look at those numbers, they really tells you that the people which we are dealing with are people who are coming to our country as economic migrants rather than asylum seekers. But that policy, as with the minister also in the budget speech, indicated that is something which we want to really finalize in the 2011 financial year. Challenges? Is that what I've said? To say the least number of refugees that status granted is a clear indication of the abuse of the asylum regime. The economic and the distance of the backlog, well, that 188 I'm talking about is what was granted the extension, but currently we are sitting with a backlog of 66,000 at store and 74,000 at the which now this is resulting in this high number of extension of this. And with the IDs, which is something we want to change, is that we're sitting at 9,300 backlogs of the IDs and 1,698 of the travel documents. Then check this issue of the unsuitable office infrastructure and office location that has resulted in court orders to close some of the refugee reception offices is really a challenge. Well, what we are doing now, Chair, is for us to really get now, we're implementing a system which we call a DocuFile, file, which will be able now to really keep the statistics properly and all the information. We are really developing a process of how can we address this issue of the backlog of the RAB and SCRA. And we are developing a framework which will guide for the establishment of the statistical located refugee reception offices so that we don't get closed. We started the engagement with the neighboring countries on the management of the secondary movement. We want to really look at implementing the principle of a safe of first safe country before you come to our country. But that we can only be able to do that when we are working together with our neighboring countries. And we participate in the regional interventions aimed at improving the management of asylum seekers and refugees. Last week, a week ago, we had the SADC conference, which was here in South Africa, which deals with the issues of immigration. In there, there is a committee which is specifically looking at the issue of the asylum seekers. So, Chair, we were really looking at the issue of opening these refugee centers around the borderline so that we can be able to run away from these court processes. But it will be dependent on the bullet number two in terms of the framework of establishing. Sir, that's what we have around the ports of entry and the issue of the asylum seekers. As I've indicated, that the issue of asylum seeker management is still a challenge. It's something which we need to really work hard on it. But the numbers are
fairly, just, and right.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, Keith. I think what we are going to do today is we will allow a few rounds of questions, but only three at a time. Three questions at a time, then we get the answers, and then we're going to ask those members who ask those questions whether they're satisfied with it, and then maybe that that could work quite well. So first round of questions, Hansby, Honorable Marcella, Honorable Freitas, I see Honorable McIntosh in that order. Honorable, what's it?
Sure, these people go back from where they came from.
And then also, I was quite surprised you say there's no system where you have fingerprints for these asylum seekers, and that's particularly worrying, because that would be a very sure and definite way of making sure, firstly, that these people are tracked, and secondly, that you say that their stories change, that there seems to be some kind of consistency, because I'm sure a lot of these people just, as you find here, most of these people don't actually qualify to even make any of these applications. Then thirdly is, there seems to be this constant problem with the actual offices, where now fees now are non-existent, but now I see the Crown Mines has been closed. We can just unpack that, what happened there. And Cape Town is on the verge. What is going on there? Why do you seem to have these problems with these premises? And what is being done that the future of this kind of thing doesn't happen? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the DG for the high standard of presentations that we've come to expect from him. And it certainly seems to me that he's got a handle on his problems. I just have three questions, Mr. Chairman, I respect that. The first one is on page 15. And that is and I think it's fantastic that you are capable to handle 55 million applications, and it's also astonishing that you can actually give a statistic which goes to 35,306,053. So that's to be commended. What concerns me is that of foreigners, there's an arrival at 13 million and there's a departure of 11 million, so that means about 1.6 million were around. Now, I don't know if we're introducing, because the approval is for engineers and our infrastructure program and our SONA was, I don't know that we've got 1.6 million engineers and highly qualified people. That's the first question. The biggest question which I'd like to ask the teacher, and I mean he's alerted us to it, is for people in Africa and Pakistan and Bangladesh and even China, where you have a China shop in Fraserburg, in Yugi, in Matakiela, in Makia, you go almost to any little place, there's a China shop. Now, they clearly, all these people regard South Africa as a honeypot, and that's their ascension. And as I've said before, and it seems to be said, by a superb, they are suffering in these other countries compared to South Africa. So, in an international sense, and it's still the same question, Mr. Chairman, and maybe the DG can't answer this, is something that the minister has to deal with. But as you said, we have the largest number of refugees in the world. We are also watched like a hawk by United Nations Commissioner on Refugees. They place certain standards on us, and yet we are in a very difficult situation. I think we are too kind-hearted as South Africans. I mean, it's our nature to be Ubuntu, and in many cases these people who come work hard, they make great contributions to our economy, etc. But they're technically not there, and I'm very alarmed with that. And this is my third question, is if we cannot fingerprint these people, and if we cannot have biometric readers, now biometric readers are everywhere with respect to the director. You go to a restaurant and you're a waiter, you can't enter anything into the restaurant thing without putting your finger on the biometric reader. You go into a block of flats in the centre of Johannesburg, most of them have access control. You put your finger on a biometric reader and the door opens. So to me, that is the actually only sure way of going forward. And there's good technology to get your fingerprints onto electronic records. And this could apply, I think, this may be a way to begin to get a handle on these people who come in. And one hears, and I don't want to repeat them, Mr. Chairman, but I just heard of Ethiopians being discovered in the back of a truck, and they've walked through Mozambique to come to South Africa, and they've been dropped off by some Somali boat on the northern shores of Mozambique, and so on and so on and so on. And people who arrive, go through, and then they just tear up their passports in the toilets, flush them away, and then they have no identity. And it seems to me that somehow we've got to get a handle on this situation. In another sense, these people, as I said, do make a contribution to our economy. So that's got to be balanced. But that's not for the department's responsibility. The chairman of the department has to administer the law, and no civil servant does a job except in terms of the law or regulation in a law. That's their responsibility. And but I do think the department needs to give advice to the minister and the parliament on what laws we could change, how we could do it more effectively, how they need more money to do certain things, and mechanisms for dealing with it. But it worries me, and that's my real question, is how do we address this issue of having the biggest number of refugees in the world? I don't, and we've got reasonable political stability around us. I mean, the only country possibly that could qualify for refugee status would be Zimbabwe. But the rest of the countries north of us have got democracy and elections, and why should they be refugees?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just one or two from my side, and then I'm going to allow answers, and then second round. We, as you know, DG, we visited Russia recently. Now, in Russia, as far as foreigners are concerned, they are absolutely and exactly aware of who are in their country. They know what they are about, whereabouts they are staying. They even have an electronic map that they showed us where they indicate you exactly from which country these people are, what their whereabouts are in Russia, whereabouts they're staying, etc. So how do we get to a point, you know, we understand your position absolutely, that you, for example, not in a position to tell us how many illegal immigrants there are in South Africa at the moment, for example. But how do one get to a point where you can really count, like they can, for the foreigners that are in your country at a specific point in time? What plan is there that one could put together to be able to track foreigners, to know what's going on in your country in terms of the foreigners that are in your country at a specific point in time? And I think one of the interesting things was that when we inquired from the Russians about refugees, refugee applications and so on, members can indicate to me, but I think there were a couple of hundred, or it was a very low figure, you know, that the applications and so on that they actually have per year, or refugees that have been allowed into the country. So the real question is also, why has it become such an issue in South Africa? Has it been a sort of a message that we send out that it is not so difficult to get refugee status here, even though your figures show that it is, that many of these applications are rejected? But, you know, and how do I change that perception? Is that not also something that one has to work on? You also indicated that we have, in terms of the SADF, the coverage of our borders is, to say the least, limited at present. They are still porous and so on. So what do you foresee, you know, in view of, there are many other countries. Russia is one example. They have a massive border beyond, you know, understanding almost. It's so vast. Many other countries in the world have vast borders. How do they deal with this kind of situation that they don't have you know, porous borders perhaps, or do they have to put up with the same problem, but how do they deal with it? And within that context, do we have a plan to actually address that on the medium term? Then I think the other issue is this appeals board and the whole appeals process. It does seem to be, with regard to refugees, it does seem to be a bit too cumbersome. You have this board that has to decide on all these cases. You indicated you want to decentralize it to an extent. But I think it's quite important to look there at the processes as such, to try and not only speed it up, but also timelines and things like that. The period within which one has to appeal should perhaps be shorter, etc. Maybe one should say that these matters have to be dealt with in writing only, and no oral presentations being allowed. There are methods like that to try and shorten that whole process, because that is clearly creating a lot of trouble, and it seems that that has to be looked at. Just two quick further matters. The one is, I think that this matter of the reception office, the refugee reception office, really need to be sorted out. You know, it is good and well to tell the portfolio committee that you have this problem with this lease and this court order and so on, but really this matter has to be dealt with now. I made the point in Parliament the other day that even if we need legislation or whatever the case may be, to make sure that we move these offices to the border posts so that people can be dealt with there immediately and they can apply immediately, then we need to do so. But we really need to sort out this problem now. It is really quite a big problem. And then last one, just this advanced passenger processing system, that in terms of the new law we will be able to also extend beyond airlines. What are the plans in that regard? Are you planning to extend it beyond only airlines? Because this is clearly also a method of establishing what the whereabouts of foreigners are. Thanks. Can you perhaps just answer this one? And then you will
thanks very much, Chair, and the Honourable Member, for the question. And we will try and respond to them. Then my colleagues will add where I will take so let me start by saying that the only thing which gives us now as a department a hope is that now as a country we think now we have crossed the line in terms of the fear to deal with this matter. I think that is what is encouraging. Because before, when we're talking about these matters, we're always portrayed as a department which is xenophobic. But at least now in the country, politically, there is that support which we are getting as a department to say it is clear now that there is a problem which we need to deal with. And that problem is only based on the interest of the security of the country. So it gives us encouragement. So let me start with your question. As you said that other countries might not have this push factor as ours, which probably demonstrates maybe some weaknesses in terms of our processes, how we're able to define who is an asylum seeker. Because if we don't have a clear definition of is what was causing the problem. Hence now there is in the department there is a policy paper which is clear in terms of what we are seeking to get, which will culminate into the change in the management of immigration as a whole in the country. In particular, that paper will really be covering the issue of, we talk about critical skills which we need to but the definition of that, we need to be clear what do we mean by critical skill. Who is coming to our country to add value? That's what we need to look at, is what added value we'll be getting. And then tighten up all these issues of asylum seeker management. think the biggest challenge was actually our own background. When we say prior 1994, we knew how our programs were. It was not easy to come. But because of the processes, we let those things to fall like the fence, and come back to the fence, that caused the corruption of our party. As I'm saying now, but politically now we've got that support, all the decision has been taken by the government to say, defense goes back to the borderline. Make sure that the borderline is coming. The other aspect, which was really problematic, hence the minister took that decision to say, as the same question James was saying, why other countries are able to do this thing probably better than us? Hence we said, let's go to the countries where we can learn, in particular Cuban. We said, Cubans, as we know their history, but how they were surviving in all these years with them. So we said, let's go and learn. What can we learn out of that? The first thing which we learned was the porousness of our sea border. Who is looking, when these vessels come, we got minister, I think he explained that in one of the debates in parliament, that when she visited Port Jones, the chief around Port Jones said to the minister, you know, in the night, we see a vessel stop there in the high seas, but the small boats which are moving in between the seabed and that, but who's monitoring that? So hence now as a department, we are starting to go back to the maritime and say, even if we can deal with the borderline, but if we leave that 2,800 kilometers, I don't know a vessel how many people can move, which can be dropped into our country like that. So it's something, Church, I'm saying, at least there is acknowledgement of those issues. That's why now we're developing that paper. We will be consulting on it to make sure that we are able to tighten this process. Well, the issue there of the appeals board. Yes, we as well said, well, we can look at the numbers. It just tells us that there's something drastically which we need to deal with it in terms of the appeals board. To strengthening it first, just the capacity. The sheer capacity, I think the current board members, which we have in terms of the position, are they three? We've got three now currently who deals with that. So it is not possible for them to deal with this. So it's something which we are working hard on. It. There is a task team which is working on the issues of the refugees, what we can do so that we can be able to deal with this matter. Yeah, we really want to deal with this issue in terms of the legislation, as you said, if it needs to. But currently, our understanding is that it is the decision of the minister to say where must we go and open the refugee center. And as well, looking at this, that now we're getting challenged. Once you open that refugee office in a business area, or when you are always challenged because of the nature of the business of that refugee center. People, they look at it as a nuisance factor. So what will be best for us is to go to an area where we know that there is nobody, it's something which we can use. More especially with this issue also, that's what we're saying, that the 5 days, which is when I come to it. But as long as we always explain with the case in Western Cape, to say Western Cape as a province is not sharing a border with any of these countries which I've mentioned. It's not. So this, it just creates, it complicates problems for us. So we were looking at the numbers to say we've got a port of entry in Musina. But the number of Zimbabweans which are processed in Musina are far, far less than the number of Zimbabweans which are processed in this refugee center here in Cape Town. So it just shows us that, but if that person doesn't have money, as we claim that there are refugees, they don't have a support, the distance between Messina and Cape Town is to interpret that. Somalis is the same. So you see that, look at that, if we can do that, it can resolve a lot of issues to bring the support to the place where people need to be assisted. So it's something we should not be looking at. Then the issue of this system, yes, currently, because of the systems, because people are coming to the land border, that bus, we cannot be able to connect. So that's why now we only be able to implement it on the airliner, but also on the vessels, because vessels have got the same infrastructure, so that we can implement it there. We know that our issue is around the land border, but these commercial, these passenger vessels, we need to get information that as they load people, how many are there, are they cleared, and also that are in the Cape Town harbour is what, you know, we want to be piloting it and as well as in the number of 790, for now is for our year as well, what I've been for the year, for now that's 790. But if we look at that number as well as against the 24 million travelers, it means, yes, you might look at if it is not a huge number, but it helps us for people to comply. So even now, what we're trying to do, Chair, as you know, that the issue about a yellow fever certificate. So we were saying, in the system, we want to know something for this yellow fever certificate as well. There's a batch number which you get from the areas which are issuing it. Then we say, if we can have that database in that advanced passenger processing system, so that when I go and check in, my yellow fever certificate is checked just into the validity of that batch number. Then it will assist so that by the time people, they don't even get loaded without a valid in terms of that batch number. Then the other place that you can check at home. So it's something which we want to improve so that the system really helps us not to create a problem. I think the honourable member is correct on the issue of this one. I mean, if we had our own way, then we would get more than this. But at least we think it's something to start. And as we said, that public works has still got the money to do other things within the border. But it was just that the minister was saying that at that pace alone, it will take us too long to resolve the two issues. So he got something more specialized and helped us just to kickstart things around this maritime border, because so we are completely worried. I think we're told that around where there are areas where people are just coming with vessels, these small fishing vessels and all that, nobody checking those things. So if we can just go and able to establish these offices, so that immigration officers can be present in the precinct of this. So it will just help us to keep the development. So as we are saying now, that the only advantage we have now is the support which we get politically. The issue of the landing cards was problematic when people were saying, no, if you take a landing card, people get robbed, people get homeless. Look, only the small percentage side which is problematic. But when you ask, do you go to the U.S.? And just say, I'm going to be staying under a bridge, then what will it mean? So what is wrong with us to get that information? And even to check, which now there's another question, that who is going back? When you go to those countries, they ask you, how much amount do you have? Mm-hmm. If you've got 5,000 rand, but their room rate there is 2,000 rand, but they say, I'm going to stay for 5 days, able to say, but this thing does not make sense. Mm-hmm. It says, no, we cannot allow you. But for us, it was as if we were asking those questions, we are more inclusive and all that. But now, there is that support which we are getting to say, no, this is reasonable. Mm-hmm. And once we get it, it's going to help us to control a lot of things. So that lending card will include those questions and say, if you are here, you're going to be staying in a hotel. have for 5 days, we've not been moving lofty waters, they picked up. And now we are drilling this mine. When I said, no, it wouldn't be possible for you to finish 10 days with this mine. So what it means, you are a one way. So I was able to check at those things. Then with regard to, this is a challenge, what do we do with the rejected people? Shall we deport people to the our inspectorate? But even there, the capacity is not able to deal with the number. But people, they challenge us to the level of even difficult to get into that state. One of the challenges which we still have is in South Africa there is a long process. Even after the RAPS has taken that decision to say your case, we are rejecting it. Still that individual has got a process of taking this into the individual court process. But I'm sure the chief will explain that. Even after they've taken that decision, they not automatically have to exercise that right of deportation. Now in PE, there is a case now which is running there, where this person says, yes, well, the process is that you appeal. Then when, remember, I give you now that extension. And when you come to renew, I give you a decision that no, your appeal has been rejected. But you take that person and you deport or you arrest on that, there is an issue. So we're still in court, there's a court case running today in PE. But Ms. Khashoggi, just explain what is the basis of that case. Again, to say, to take this person is not as easy. There are still processes even after that SCRA and RAP taken that decision. But I want Mr. Chief to explain the part of their process, and Ms. Khas, just to give us on that case in PE, what is the basis of it. Well, when I was talking about the fingerprints, I meant not once the people come to our refugee centers, we take the fingerprints. The one I was talking about is when they are arriving at a port of entry, who are not having the system to take the fingerprints, and that's what we're doing. We're letting them just to give them the section 23 and come in. But now with our system, and what is important is the integration of systems. So things which are going on these things, that the person will come into the country as Mr. So-and-so, apply for the asylum seeker process. The next thing now, this person gets married, and he comes out and apply for an IED. Because now it's married. But because the systems are not talking to each other with that fingerprint, which you can be able to say, no, but this ID which now is being applied for, is it the same person who came in as an asylum seeker? That process is not yet closed, but now you are already having a wife or a child and all those kind of things. So that's why now the integration of system is so important for us, so that we can be able to close this loop. Well, I think I've touched the issue of offices. Yes, Kalmans was closed a long time ago. It was again a court decision, which is the same with what is happening now in Cape Town. But as we said, I do want to come up with a total solution of things. It is a fact from the Honourable Mackintosh that that's why now these statistics, we look at them. Because it means, yes, it is not possible that the difference between that number is people's skills and all that. That is what we're saying. If you've got a lending card, it will help me not to be able to say, we received so many people. This one did not go back because it was not necessary, but it was coming as a permit to work. But this one was coming for a visitor's permit, did not come back. Then inspectorate, go and follow up those people. So people, they come with a one ticket. That's why one of the changes wanted to make sure that when people come to the country, we also enforce the issues of a return ticket, no special to the visitors. Because that process, which was saying, that just show us, they were giving us a guarantee in the form of money to say, yes, I paid 2,500, it comes at the right cheap, I don't have money. Then people they don't care, they can lose that. Anyway, it's there as well as they go back after 20 years. But if you've got a process like a return ticket, it can enforce. But what would help you even on that is when you are able to follow up on the lending card. If you do not have, it won't assist you. As I said, that the biometric is what we will be implementing. Chair, honourable member talk about, really what we need as South Africans is just a paradigm shift in the management of the ecosystem. That's all. Once we get to that level, we understand with this policy which we'll be bringing, then it will help us to be able to change the situation. So I'm starting with Mr. Chief.
The process of appeal, when the amnesty was rejected, an asylum seeker and found the asylum seeker has 30 days to lodge an appeal with the appeals clerk. Then there's a notice of motion, the notice of appeal with an affidavit. Then after that, we will issue him with a notice of hearing for 10 days so that he can come and appeal for him. And once a member has had the case, the member has the time period there, he has to be able to determine the appeal within the period of the month. So that is why then we will have an extension of that section 22 pending the decision of the refugee appeal court. But also, even when we have made the final decision where the matter has been dismissed, I mean, people they still take those matters on high court to review our decisions. But I mean, I can say that. Even though they review them, it's not like in other countries like Canada where you find there's a lot of review. I mean, I think review of our decisions doesn't make even close to 5% of the decisions that we've made. But I think it can be a problem because sometimes it can be also a delaying tactics just for a person not to be able to leave within a particular period because then the review takes a long time. I mean, it might not finish within the case, it might finish after 3 years. So that's the problem.
Thanks, Chief. Member, the case in question, which is the 16 people in PE that are taking the department to court, clearly indicates the problems or challenges that we are faced with in the implementation of the Act and the discharge of our responsibility. There are three reasons, or the basis is informed by three reasons. One, these were people that had applied for asylum, and they were found their decisions or the claim was found to be unfounded, and the appeals board went through the hearing and upheld the decision of the arrest people. And when they then, like the DG had already indicated, that you give them extension, and the extension in the condition of the extension is this person is awaiting a decision from the appeals board. So you are giving an estimation, let's say 6 months. Now when you come, the decision is taken before the 6 months is up and the decision is upheld, the RSDO decision, it means your permit has expired because you were awaiting the decision. Now these people came on the 19th, that the permit was going to expire on the same day, the 19th, because that's when they will come. And then they came in to extend, and it was found that the decision is already there, and then the RSDO withdrew the permit and handed the person over to Inspectorate for deportation. And now they are saying that, but I still had a permit and I was in the country legally, so you did not, you were not supposed to withdraw my permit. The other thing is, they're saying that the other reason is that the RAB was not well constituted. They are not challenging the decision of the RAB, but they are challenging the fact that the RAB was not well constituted, because now an act it says that you need to have
the chairperson sitting with another member for them to take a such decision. That is another basis that they are challenging. And then the last one is about, you know, we have got one Lindela, and the Lindela is in Gauteng. Now what happens is that is a place where you then take, you are taken to be processed for deportation. But if you are arrested in Eastern Cape or Mpumalanga or elsewhere, you need to be taken somewhere so that you can then be transported to Lindela. Now they are challenging that, that they were detained in a place that is not designated for this kind of people. And those are the three reasons, right? So it just indicates the practicalities and the challenges that we are faced with in the implementation of the Act, and again in the discharge of the responsibilities that you're faced with. For instance, you look at the Act itself, or the, if you look at the people that we're dealing with, it does say, it indicates that those people, once you are expecting everybody to utilize the port of entry to enter South Africa, but this category of people can enter anyway. And that in itself creates a lot of problems at a security level, and also that it really makes this regime to be vulnerable and to be abused by everybody else that is already in the country. Thank you.
Yeah, on that, I just want to make a quick point before I allow further questions. You know, on the there is just this difference between abuse of a process and sometimes where we are actually acting in a way that makes our actions possible for attack. Or we create the possibility for attack. For example, in that case, I'm not going to ask you into the facts of the matter, whatever. But I mean, if that appeals board wasn't properly constituted, then it wasn't properly constituted, and then we have a problem, and that's created by us, and not necessarily by abuse of the process. It's not an abuse then to take that to court. So we must also make sure that our own plate is clean on these matters. Members, please, let me see the hands of Honourable Peterson Matuna, then Honourable... Nisi on the other side. Nisi and Makuba. And Matebe, that's right. In that order. Sorry for that. And Honorable King. In that order. I saw your glasses.
Thank you very much, Chair, for giving me a username. I would like to appreciate and thank the comprehensive report from the DG. It's only that sometimes we don't have enough time to do justice in this report. Because as a committee, this presentation is very much important to us. My first question is on page 14. On page 14, you here stated that a total of 47 ports of entry have been equipped with EMCS, and the EMCS has improved the efficiency, security, and turnaround time on the admission process. In the traveler data is no longer captured manually, but it is scanned into the system. Since only 47 ports of entry out of 72 have been equipped with the EMCS control system, what are the plans and obstacles for the remaining ports of entry? My other question is, what ports of entry have been identified as priority for the development of infrastructure at land and maritime ports of entry in the current next financial year. And what solutions have been considered to address the significant appeals and the burden? Because we can see that there is a serious problem around the talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would also like to thank the DG for the presentation this morning. I also wanted to ask on the 47 ports of entries, but I want to ask a different question. How does the department now check, you know, and you're saying on page 46 that the EMCS has improved the efficiency, the security, and the turnaround time. Now, on the 25 port of entries that are remaining, how is the movement controlled? And how accurate is the manually captured information? That is what I wanted to know. And most of the questions that the DG and the other members from the department have answered, what I wanted to find out. But I also just want to add what the DG said about the statistics for refugee application on Zuma and Port Elizabeth. I just want to know, has an investigation been conducted to find out why in Mosina we have such a low number and PE, with all the reasons that were stated by the DG, Port Elizabeth has got such a big number? Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Patent presentation of this part of entry and the balance sheet development. To me, it's very difficult and challenging. But it's not a question to say the challenge is a concern. My suggestion was this. I was thinking of maybe having enough time to discuss this issue of because of entry. Why I'm saying so is because of country, the security of the country at large. To us, it's really the challenge, the big challenge. For instance, some of us, we have been refugees, because they can't see it one way or another. My second question is the relationship of SAP, SNDF, staff. How do the department work with the department? That really, to me, doesn't make any sense. When we went to oversight, one of the, I don't know, I can't remember, but we never even a police said that we speak to for a day. So it's just a challenge to us. We don't know what happened. The relationship also, we need to know how does it work. On the issue of a port of entry, can't we close some of them to the number of maybe the 30s or whatever so that we can be easily manageable and controllable? And the last is the question of economic migrants in the slow space. This is in South Africa. So we are talking about the large number of the people inside the country without the proper papers. They don't have even papers, but they're here. What are they going to do with those people? Because they are already in the country. They're not going through the refugee centers, water gates, or this. Because now, when it comes to the numbers of the people who are in this country, can't even count. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I understand the question. And Chair, I think most of the panelists. Thank you, Chair. I think still accepted this medication for the asylum seekers in food. I was thinking that we have a lot of Nigerians here. How can they come? How do they enter Cape Town? How can they come here and Zimbabwe and so on? But I think you have alluded to that particular concern. And the second one is Chen. I think I want to support the landlord. But you know, one day it was raining there. It was raining heavily. Then there was a traffic jam in Port Chagami in Maitland. And then when I looked, I thought this is Molanyana Port, Home Affairs. So I thought, let me go and check what happened here. And then I went and I just showed this passage. And when I got there, I mean the conditions there, I don't know whether they have changed, but the conditions there, they are terrible. You can't deal with people in that particular condition. So I want to support the landlord in that particular one. I think the manager is right. Honestly, if you could go there, I mean, there is no human being that could be treated in that center. I don't even call it a center. I don't know what it is. Especially when we go into that big hall. Because I went in and I just checked what's going on. So you must be careful. Sometimes when you see this thing, you just walk in and if you are one of the refugees or whatever, and you just look through. And you know, in that, you know, if the conditions that are like that, they make staff to be impatient and not tolerant. And it's exactly what I tested that particular day. The way people were treated, it was not fair to those people. So, I mean, the conditions, the working conditions are very, very important for the staff now as well. I think that's what I wanted to highlight, Chair. And the last thing I wanted to highlight is the issue of the people that are coming to do business in South Africa. But I think this particular case is not for Home Affairs. I don't know whether it's for Treasury or whatever department. Especially, let me say the Chinese that are coming here. I will always make an example of Cape Town because I stay in Cape Town. I think almost now in each and every open space or corner, the Chinese have got Chinese town. Mm-hmm. But if you go there and buy, you must use cash. And you don't use card. Mm-hmm. You don't use any credit card. You must buy cash. And I always ask myself, how are they paying taxes in this country? Are we gaining in South Africa from these people that have been here all over South Africa? Even if you go to Johannesburg, the same thing is the same. And I'm asking myself, who's supposed to be monitoring this? Because I think we are losing a lot, and the Chinese are getting a lot in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. Attending to those questions first, and then we will. Yeah. But you, I can see you, and I'm then in the last round.
Sorry, there's someone looking for me.
Thank you, DG.
From the Honourable Minister, that first, yes, there is a plan for us to complete the 25. So those who are doing it, if you remember, in 2010-11 for the World Cup, it was 34 ports of entry. And then now in the 11-12, we added the ones to go to 47. In this year, we're going to be doing another 10. In the 2012-13, so that we can complete that dinner in the other following year. But what we have said is that we look at the high volume ones when we're dealing with that 34, but we want to do all of them at the end of the day. So there is a plan for us to be able to do this. With regard to the ports, which ones we have identified within that 110, 15 million of that amount has been given for the maritime one. So Tariq will just give those ports which are under that 15 million. Then with the land ports, we're looking at Maseru Bridge, we're looking at Lubombo and Great Bridge, because it's not a big amount. But in Lubombo, at least we're still pushing public works there to complete. Well, that port is new, but it's not utilized, lots of small things. So depending that if we have managed to push public works, but in Lubombo for us, it would be more on the housing side. So those are the three. But on the maritime, well, in terms of the plans to address the backlog, as we said, that there's a task team which has been established in the department. Even tomorrow we'll be meeting as well, on Thursday meeting with the DM to deal with that issue. I think we've already advertised, we've already advertised the post of the additional RAB member. So for us now it's just to complete now the process of filling those posts. So out of the three we're getting about six. So we've advertised six positions which will be adding on that we can be able to push for that backlog. Well, Honourable Member McCormack, with the you remember that when we're implementing the new MCS there was an old one. So the old is still there to manage, but it's just that it is on a batch format. It captures things during the day, and then after a period of the night, sends it to headquarters. So we still manage the ports of entry. There is a system. When we say manual, it doesn't mean manual in the sense that it is paper. They still capture in the old system. Well, we have not yet connected, because we're picking this thing just now, the one of Musina and Debe. But what people were telling us is just that people, in fact, it demonstrates that people are not here about anything except about the economic interests. So when they go to Musina, they don't want to do anything there. They want to go to Cape Town, they want to go to Joburg. So they just get taxis, they move in buses to come to this. So that is only the interest of the economy. But we have not yet done that study currently. But that is the well, we agree with the Honourable Member Matao to say this is something which we need to discuss, as we said, but it would, we are pushing that this policy, because once we first know, we're going to be taking it now to within the department, once the minister starts to approve, then we'll be going to the stakeholders like the portfolio committee and make sure that we really get it. So that now the new policy which must come around immigration really must be properly dealt with it. And yes, we need to have heart when we deal with that, but also get looking really at the interest of the country and say, are we agreeing to do this? What is the benefit? So let's make sure that the act is done. Well, with the police and the SARS and the defense, there is the inter-clearing agency which we are meeting as this department every 2 weeks at a national level. That is the DGs for SARS, commissioner, and representatives from defense. But we're still building this. For instance, here in there is what we call the BCOCC, which now the structure they need under that umbrella, so that we make sure that the decisions are taken at that level, even at a port of entry. Those things are implemented. And what we were, which now the JCPS cluster of ministers have already taken that decision to say Home Affairs must take a lead with regard to the movement of the people. So it means that even those structures will need to be chaired by Home Affairs in each part of it so to make sure that the movement of the people take a primary at a particular part of it. But the issue is the one which deals now with that rationalization is the one which you say, if you go to one port of entry, you find that there's only one department, the other is not there. So that study
we will come probably to a conclusion that maybe a particular port of entry, it is not necessary, not given value to the department, but maybe we open another one in the right point. So that exercise, we will come to that as well, conclusion, to say which ones you need to keep them, probably the ones that you need to close. However, it's not an easy exercise to close the port of entry because of other countries. Because the moment that port of entry is serving you, is serving the other country. So you might have that interest with the other country. But that study will really be able to tell us. Well, this issue of what we're doing with the people, and I think that's the illegal people in the country. I think once our systems are tight, we are clear, we are dealing with the capacity to deal with these issues of a backlog and all that, then we'll be able to enforce the process of deportation. But if we are still weak on the side of decisions, it makes people to get that leeway of always getting these extensions and extensions. But it's something which we will be working on it, and then once that police also is out, we'll be telling which ones they will still remain and which ones they will have if they don't have the necessary information. I think that in the comment from Honorable Member Khotana, yes, one of the problems there was that because that contract was on a month to month, the landlord said, I'm not going to do any maintenance. Because if I want to do, I want to invest money to invest to maintain that. And then on month two, after I spend 200,000 rand, leave. So I've got a problem. So that's why, you know, that you are right to say, you know, then that office is really not conducive for that. But it's something which we will look at. Then this issue of the business is a critical matter. And there is an exercise which we are doing at Marama State. Because what we found out in South Africa, there is no law, firstly, which compels you to go and register anywhere if you open a business, not there. So DTI is dealing with that matter to say, if we don't have, it means if I'm opening my cell phone shop, I'm opening whatever, is not necessary for me to register. So who is running these businesses? So based on that, now SARS, with ourselves, there was a study which we're doing in around the Maraba start, just to go and do the registration, just profiling of all those businesses which are around there. So they're going to be able to see that the magnitude of this problem, if you take one area like Maraba start, if you recall when we had a problem in Alexandra area, as one of us, we did a small start there, where we found that your businesses which are there, people, what are they for documents, how many are they, what they are running, and also that there's always been this perception there which we say, well, the foreign businesses are creating employment in the country and all that. When you go to those businesses, people are working there. If they are not underpaid, it's also people coming from the same countries which are there. So that's what the study was showing us. So that report is when I have now the current system. That's why there might even that issue to say you don't open a bank account. It just demonstrates something else around this issue. So really there were a lot of things which as a country you were relaxed on them which you cannot get somewhere else where you don't register a business. And if you don't, then you don't know who's running that business for what, and the income coming out of there, how is it being utilized?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well,
can
Tariq was going to respond on that number of posts under the 15 million.
The 15 million might seem to be a little bit of money, but what we've done is we've gone into those ports and we've looked at state-owned buildings in the ports as the first port of call. So for instance, in Cape Town, we needed to move fast. Processes of spending money very often are slow. We identified in Cape Town a building and we're signing on the dotted line with PWD in the next 2-3 weeks. The building is not just interagency center within the within the harbors. And so we're piloting in Cape Town, moving immediately. We've already gone to Durban and identified buildings there. And we've gone to Nuka, we've gone to PE. We're due to go through to Richards Bay. We are also looking at Mossel Bay and Saldanha Bay. The other port, Simonstown, is also an international port of entry, but that's military, it's naval. And then there's a dry dock in Gauteng, which is also outside of the ambit of what we're doing. So where we don't have to spend money in construction and major renovation, we're doing that, and we're doing that quite quickly. So that 15 million is there to roll out. For instance, in Mossel Bay, there's nothing. In Saldanha Bay, there's nothing. So that is where that money focus will go. Whereas in Cape Town, we're already paying rental for where we are. Each of the agencies are taking their rental money, putting it together, and getting this government house. And the maritime environment, unlike the other border posts, are very, very different. Cape Town is 17 square kilometers of border for us within the port of entry. Durban is 32 square kilometers. Multiple entry points. So the way we work there, we can't just work immigration. We've got to work interagency. And therefore, the DG referred to the interagency clearing forum. All of the role players there, in the form of a subcommittee, people who have naval expertise, policing expertise, intelligence expertise, immigration expertise, have formed that committee, have gone from port to port, and we're moving quickly. We identified problems last October, November, and we're already putting solutions in place now. So I think that it's very exciting. I enjoy my job, and I believe that we will be able to make a difference in a very short space of time.
Okay, I just want to go through, with the exception of Honorable Hashi Goldberg, I don't think I'll allow new questions, but only follow-ups on your questions, because in the first instance, I think everyone should have asked all questions at the time. Honorable Hashi Goldberg, and then Marcella, follow-up. Dagobos also as a follow-up, and the Freitas as a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to know, in a case whereby a refugee or an asylum seeker versus a center for processing on a wrong day, let's say it's a day on which Somalis are processed and an Indian versus the center, are they sent back or are they being assisted? Considering the fact that the Refugee Act now requires that the permit seekers must apply within 5 days. Thank you.
Hello, Costello. It was more or less similar to this one, because my concern is that we've got a strict 5 days which we are compelling people to report back, and it's not working within the 14 days that is there now. So that then means that when it becomes operationalized, many people are going to be rendered illegal. There was also another question which I asked, because never responded into, around this one, the one that I raised earlier. So I think
Mr. Chairman, with respect, you said we could ask 9 questions. I was very disappointed and only asked 3 questions in the first round. But I have one question and 2 comments. The first question is, I actually think, Mr. Chairman, this whole aspect of refugees and peoples, it's too big a fish for us. We're sleeping with an elephant at the moment. How will we get a handle on everybody? And what my question is, let's suppose we can start to get really tough with the inspectors and everybody on people who call themselves asylum seekers, but they actually want to eat at the honeypot. How would we get rid of them? In the sense, what I'm saying, perhaps not get rid of them is the right word. How would we export them or repatriate them or get them back? And take, for example, you encounter quite a lot of people who speak Swahili, and they come from Rwanda, Bujumbura. There are many, many Congolese, not only from the south of Lubumbashi, but from Kinshasa, where they all speak Lingala. Now, let's supposing there are 10,000 of these people, and we're not only 100,000. How do we get them back to Kinshasa? That's my question. So I'd just like to know whether the department has a plan. If they clamped down very vigorously, how would we move these thousands of people? And I'm only talking about tens of thousands, not possibly as many as 100,000. The comments I want to make to is interagency, Chairman. I think one of the interagencies you can use is SARS. And this is more particularly your traders, because I have discovered, because I like to talk to people and ask questions, that quite a lot of people are coming in on what they call business permits. So they say, I'm coming to South Africa, the Cameroonians, the Senegalese, I'm coming on a business permit. And they seem to get in quite easy, and they get a 3-year permit. And maybe that's an impact. And I think you may have put your finger on this element of them opening businesses. I don't think we know how many Ethiopians there are. Now, they are very quiet, and most of them are very religious people, and most of them are Christians, and they've really built, you'll see, Ethiopian churches, or bought churches, in certainly Johannesburg. So I'm not suggesting they are not law-abiding. I think they're very law-abiding in a sense, but they're illegal. Now, what concerns me is that one should get hold of them, and we had an incident in the building where I have an interest, where our three or four shops, because of course in the center of Joburg, it's very difficult to find a South African who's trading in a shop that's Chinese or Bangladeshi or Nigerian. As SARS arrived and said, we want to see your VAT returns, and they couldn't produce it, and they just changed the shops closed, which created a problem for a landlord, because how can SARS seize the shop? Because the guys must pay their rent. But it was certainly a very effective way to get these guys to go legal. So I would just like to suggest, with respect to our DG, that he maybe liaises a bit more closely with SARS, because we remember the mafia in America was caught not by the FBI, but by the Internal Revenue Service. Because as my colleague here said, it's cash, cash, cash. But cash has to go somewhere, somehow, at some stage, and SARS could help us there. And then a last comment is, I'm interested to see the Cubans are still so strong, and we know what the minister's attitude is, but I'd like to suggest that when... that's not a question. That's a comment. I said one question and two comments. I would like to suggest that when they come, just to get them orientated to South Africa, you please take them to the Independent Electoral Commission, so that they can be conscientized into electoral democracy.
See, that's how he's a politician, honorable McIntosh. He's all kinds of things on the comments and whatever the guys will be teaching.
Yes. No, thanks very much. I think maybe we didn't explain it clearly when we talk about those days. What we're splitting the days with is more, which I'm going to bring with that thing, what we're going to be trying to do, maybe we didn't mention it. The issue of the approach which we have, the DM, we're implementing what we call is to deal with the people as they come. That's why now you see that we're starting to have the statistics per month. We've got the per refugees. So now we've got new arrivals. The new arrivals, they don't have a day. We don't split them.
because if a person who's coming from, who can't know that I must go on a Tuesday or I must go on a Monday. The new arrivals, we deal with them all. Not, this split is more for people are coming for renewal of the extensions, and for them, they already have a permit. So they know when we say on Monday, we're dealing with this, so they go on those days. But even a person for a renewal and is coming on a wrong date, we are saying, no, we can't manage, because if we don't, then it means now when people are returned, most people are not respecting those days, but for them it's for renewals. So new arrivals, we want to deal with them as they come. Our first priority is to deal with people who are coming for new arrivals. Even now with them, in addition to the extensions, because what was the problem as well, so what we are looking at the system now. It was saying if my permit is expiring on the 30th of April, I must go on the 30th of April. So there's no kind of a system like that. It should allow 15 days before you expire. So that for me, I can come on the first day, another one come on the second day, as long as it is before you expire. So that's what we're looking at. So we the people whom we will return if they've come on a wrong day, and these ones who are coming for extension, so we are able to. Because what we want is to make sure that when people go to that office on that day, there must be expectation that I will be served. We don't want people standing in a queue knowing that by that time you close, you cannot be served. So that's what we are looking at. I'm not sure that now I've responded to another person who asked whether that was the question. Oh, what was the question?
Yes, it was more or less around that, but the fact that the standards are far, in fact, the fact that there are other areas who are far from the standards, which would be mainly in the border, people are already in the cities and they might render stateless if the standards are completely moved, all of them, to the borderline. So that was one of the questions. The other ones I cannot ask, I'll put them in writing. The chairperson is exercising his power.
Yes. No, as we said that there is a strategy, we'll be looking at all those things because there might be a differentiation between people who are coming for the first time and the people who need services in terms of renewing and all that, but on the strategy that will come in. Now, the issue of how we're going to get the people back, that's why, as I said, firstly, we really want to participate or are participating within the regional community. That is subject. And also, we are also part of the other structures like AU. For instance, now currently, there is the issue of the repatriation of Angolans, which is managed through the UNHCR and the IOM. So we participate on those. So that really is not the issue that we want just to go and dump people somewhere. It must be a process. So also you are not allowed, that's why it causes problems at times in our Lindela, that before you return a person, it is clear, you only return a person to his or her country of origin. How do you know that? You need now to work with the embassy. The embassy is able to say, yes, I am able to confirm that these people are my citizens. And once we got that agreement, it's then that we are able to repatriate. So this process is something which we have to work on it in a human manner. So something which we do. Then, yes, the interagency is something which we look at it and as well as something that is a comment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, EG. I think from our side, we all agree that we do politically support within, obviously, the framework of our obligations in terms of international law and our constitution pertains to tightening up the management of foreign nationals and so that and that is also from our side that you should know that you have the support as far as that is concerned. But I do think that we also, and I mean it also relates to the question that I asked, but we need a plan to know. What are your plans to cover our borders properly? And I'm not asking you a question now to answer or anything like that, but we need a plan to say, okay, fine, we've learned from the Cubans, that there have been formers along their coast, so we are going to them. Secondly, we learned from them that they, or from another country, that they have 15 vessels covering their coastline, because of the fact that the coastline is X kilometers long. So we need that, and for that we need so many billion or whatever the case may be, but at least that we know what we need in terms of that. We need, for example, you know, at least so many members of the Defense Force to properly cover our borders. And where our border posts are, we need to cover, let's say, at least 10 kilometers to every side quite properly as well, so that we don't have informal crossings or something. I think we need a sort of a clear indication as to, and it doesn't all have to happen immediately, obviously. We're talking about the medium term, yeah. Secondly, I think one need to have some kind of a plan from your side as to how we're going to establish the status of people in this country. I don't know whether it's, you know, how it's possible at all, but I'm not sure whether it's, you know, acceptable just to accept that we actually don't know, you know, how many illegal immigrants we have. We don't really know what's going on within our borders, in a sense. I think there should be some kind of a program similar to possibly the Zimbabwean special status program, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Give people an opportunity to come forward, whatever the case may be, but we need to know what's going on in our borders. And thirdly, there are lots of elements to this. It's the movement of the officers to the reception officers to the borders, etc., etc. But we need also a plan to process the status determination of refugees and asylum seekers more expeditiously and efficiently. Some of the elements you have mentioned to us, but I think one needs a specific plan to say, this is how we're going to do this. Step one will be to move the officers, the reception officers to the borders. Step two will be to improve the appeal board's process, or the appeal process. We're going to improve it like this. Going to change the legislation, so you have to appeal within 3 days, and then the application will have to be dealt with within 5 days. It will only be in writing, whatever the case may be. We need a specific indication as to how do we improve this process, and all the necessary steps listed so that one can engage us as far as that is concerned. But in general, we, as you know, you have the support of our committee, and we think that you're on the right track in many respects, but in terms of these things that I've mentioned and a few of the others that the members have mentioned, we will, you know, you have to expect that we will also monitor what kind of progress there is. And that's why we also indicate to you where we feel there must be specific plans that we can engage with you with regards to. But thank you very much for a very detailed presentation. These are very complex matters. We know it's not just a flick of the fingers to solve these problems, not at all. We are aware of your, of what you've done thus far already. We're proud of the work that this department is doing. We can see you turning around and stuff. And we support you as far as that is concerned. Is that fine, members? Can we adjourn?
Yes.
Thank you very much.